This is an interview with Amanda Grimal Lococo, who served with the U.S. Army Reserve from June of 1993 to June of 2001. The interview is being conducted at the home of her parents in Grafton, Wisconsin, on January 9th of 2005, and the interviewer is Vicki Shannon. So, Mandy, why don't you start out by just giving us a little background on you, the year you were born in your hometown. Tell us a little bit about your family.
I was born in 1975. In Grafton, Wisconsin, where I grew up for many years until I graduated from high school. And I was born to Pete and Mary Grimal. I was the oldest of three kids. My sister Katie is 3.5 years younger than me, and my brother Matt is 1.5 years younger than her.
Okay.
And life in Grafton was pretty good. It's a great town to grow up in, and had a lot of friends and a lot of family that lived around here as well. All of our family is from Grafton, and pretty much everybody still lives here as well. So
on both sides.
On both sides, exactly.
Okay. And what type of education did you have prior to going into the military?
The last grade that I had completed was high school. I joined the military about a month after I graduated from high school.
And what prompted you to do that?
Actually, a friend of mine from high school also had been planning on joining the military, and one of the days she was going to actually see the recruiter, I just so happened to be going to lunch with her, and so she asked me to come with her.
Okay.
We stopped in the recruiter's office, and he started talking to me and explained to us that we would be able to join, if we wanted to, we'd be able to join on the buddy system. So we thought this would be a great idea. I also was not really sure if I was ready to go to college yet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I thought maybe I wanted to do something a little bit different, maybe take a semester off and do basic training and all of that. So I was only 17 at the time, though, so after cajoling my parents that this would be a very good idea for me, they gave me the permission to join.
Okay.
And so we did. The two of us went down to MEPS downtown.
Okay. Now, the recruiter actually came to the high school?
No, the recruiter we had gone to the recruiter's office, which was in Port West Bend, I believe, at the time.
And this was an Army recruiter?
Correct.
I know you were just going with your girlfriend because
right.
she was going.
Right.
And you went just because she was going, or you thought, oh, I'll just see
no,
what it's about?
It really was pretty circumstantial.
Okay.
The two of us were going out to lunch, and she was planning on joining and had to stop there to drop off some papers or something.
Okay.
And so I just so happened to be along. It is probably not something I would have thought of doing.
Okay.
Had I not really been with her.
And once the idea came into your mind that,
mm-hmm.
oh, maybe this is an option for
mm-hmm.
me, did you ever consider any other branch of the service, like Navy or Air Force?
At that time, I didn't. No.
Okay.
No, I didn't. I just really stuck with going with the Army.
Probably because of the buddy system offered. Huh?
Because of the buddy system offered, and the opportunities that they had explained at that time seemed really well in line with what I wanted to do. You know, they said that the occupations that were available at that point would only require a minimum amount of training,
mm-hmm.
which was good because it only would require me to take a semester off of school, and I'd be able to start school the spring of the next year.
Okay.
So for me, that was one of the reasons why I decided to join that branch also, is because I would only be away for about 4 months.
Okay. So you were planning on going on to college.
Yes.
But you just didn't
was
want to go right
at that
from
time.
High school.
Exactly. Exactly.
And I thought you'd try something totally different.
Right. Yes, exactly. And I thought it would be a very good experience too.
Okay. What did he tell you what type of jobs were available that interested you? Or?
Well, he talked, there was quite a variety of jobs that they offer, and you know, it just depends on what time of year you're actually joining as far as what's available, because I believe that the fiscal year starts October 1st.
Okay.
And so as of October 1st, all of the jobs for that particular year are available to anybody who wants to enlist,
mm-hmm.
depending on, you know, what you're qualified for and things like that. But I wasn't enlisting until June.
Mm-hmm.
So by that point, a lot of the jobs were actually already taken. So it was really a variety of like engineering jobs. Carpentry, masonry, truck driver, a lot of different engineering type jobs that were available. So,
and when you, with your plan to go to college, were you hoping to go into engineering or something? Or
no, no, it really didn't have anything in line with what I was planning on doing down the line. I just thought it was something completely different.
Yeah. What were you interested in doing for college?
Into business.
Oh.
I was planning on going into business, which I did.
Okay.
I did end up going into marketing. And so it was, at that point, they really didn't have a lot of jobs in my field of education that I was going to go into.
Right.
So it was something completely different.
And it gives you a chance.
It was much more trade. You know, they had the trades available.
Try things you never thought of.
Exactly, exactly.
So it was kind of like a way to get away from home
mm-hmm.
and yet not have to worry about food and rent. And
right. And I thought long term, too, for me, the thing that was very attractive is there was a bonus when you enlisted.
Okay.
The experience, and I thought it would be something that would be really neat. You meet a lot of new people. You know, you know, looking back on it, being as young as I was, I went into it really not knowing much about it.
Mm-hmm.
And you just kind of learn as you go along.
Right.
And I just kind of did what I was recommended to do. And
did they promise to help with your schooling once you got...
Well, that also, they offered the GI Bill. Okay. They also offer the student loans that you can get through the military as well, help with the student loans. So that also was one of the reasons why I decided to join too.
Okay.
And also because there was the signing bonus at that point for some of the jobs that were available.
Yeah. So when you're 17 years old, money always looks good.
It always looks good, right.
What kind of commitment were they requiring from you when you joined the reserves?
Well, from the initial standpoint for basic training, it was going to be 8 weeks of basic training. And then depending on the job, it would determine what amount of advanced training. For the job I ended up taking, it was also 8 weeks.
Okay.
So
they assured you you would be home again.
Right.
So you could start school.
Exactly.
And once you finish your trainings.
Mm-hmm. Once I was done with that, it was 1 week in the month and 2 weeks in the summer. What would it be required?
So that's what they told you was going to happen.
Right.
So now you said you've agreed to join, and you went down to Milwaukee for your MEPS.
It's actually the MEPS building. It's the it's the government building downtown.
And that would stand for?
I'm not sure.
Okay.
I don't know, but it's Milwaukee. I'm not sure. Yeah, it's the government building downtown.
Government
I don't know what the MEPS
stands for. MEPS would mean for government.
I don't know either. I'm sure we could pick it up, but I'm not sure right offhand either.
Milwaukee Environmental Protection, but I'm sure it wasn't.
Well, maybe it's government / something else. I'm not sure that's the name of the building.
Okay.
But yes, then we went. So then, we decided to enlist together. This friend of mine from high school and myself, and so the two of us went down with the recruiter one morning, and they were doing. They enlist people one day a week.
Oh, okay.
So I think it was actually on a Saturday that we went down. And we went through all of the counseling and choosing the job, all of the medical exam and all of that. And then they actually do the, signing you in.
Or so swearing you in, I should say. A counseling?
I believe they meet with you and check as to, you know, find out why you want to join and, you know, give you some information before you actually do swear in to join, obviously, because there's such a big commitment that you're making.
Did you ever see anybody leave that office and walk out of the building?
Well, the friend that I was doing the buddy system with did not end up joining.
You're kidding?
No.
After the counseling, she decided I really.
No, what she actually did is really why we're not friends anymore.
Oh, we're not even friends anymore. Okay.
Because she had gotten me into going this whole buddy system thing, which mm-hmm. was great because they said that, you know, when you get to basic training, you would be guaranteed that you'd stay together throughout your whole training. So that was fun. I mean, that was a good idea for me. She was the one who basically, you know, had started me on the whole road to joining the military in the first place. And so we had decided we were going to do the job. We went through everything together. We went through, you know, we both got counseled. We went, picked our jobs. Our jobs were going to be the same. Went through the medical exam, and then they take you into the room to swear in. My group went first. I went in with my group. I swore in. I came back out. Her group was next. She said, I'm not going to join. So
did the friendship end at that moment?
Pretty much on the ride home. So what do you mean you're not going to join? And she said, well, I lied during my medical exam. I told them that I had knee problems, so they're not letting me join. They said that I can't due to medical reasons. So they wouldn't let me join at that point. But that was after the fact. Which I still would have anyways.
On the ride home, did you ask her at what
talk
point she decided?
No. She just said when she got there that morning and realized what she was doing, that it scared her a little bit.
Okay.
You know, and so...
And you never really talked to her since to
no,
find out she regretted it?
No, you know, we talked a little bit, so, I mean, a couple weeks later is when I ended up leaving for basic training, so...
Okay.
So, no, I mean, you know, I understood. I mean, it's a big commitment. You obviously
right.
wouldn't want someone to do that if they weren't completely comfortable with it.
But one of the clinches was that you were going to be with somebody
in the system, exactly. So I ended up going by myself, which actually in the long run probably was better.
Maturity-wise, exactly.
Yeah. Because you don't have someone there to lean on, and you're basically forced to, you know, to meet new people and everything like that, and to just kind of overcome that, because it was definitely a challenge.
So you left the
mom and dad for the first time. Yeah,
I had a quiet 25-mile ride home.
Right. Yes, it was very quiet.
And when did you have to report for duty then, or basic training?
Yeah, I actually enlisted on June 24th of 1993, and then I left July 28th.
Okay.
So.
And you went to where?
I went to Fort Jackson, South Carolina.
In July.
Yes.
A little bit warm.
But very, very. It was hot the whole time I was there. Okay. 100 degree plus days most
and
of the time.
What was basic training like?
The first week was very hard. It was probably the hardest week of my life, because at that point you're actually just going through initiation. You're not actually starting the training. So I think when you're in basic training, you like to count down the days till you're done.
Oh, okay.
In the first week of initiation, you can be there anywhere from 2 to 7 days. So you don't know when you're going to be actually starting the training. You can't start counting down the day you're going to be leaving.
Okay.
So it's kind of like, you know, and also, I mean, being away from home for the first time, not knowing anybody,
okay,
and being in this military-type environment,
and
where
it was quiet,
where it's like they're not very friendly. So it was very hard.
And what goes on during the initiation that it can take anywhere from 2 to 7 days?
They're giving you a background of the military, you know, basically
okay.
training you as far as like what the military is, what the Army is, who, you know, are all of the officers. They issue all of your uniforms. You know, you go through medical exams. If you need eyeglasses, you get eyeglasses. You learn how to salute an officer. You know, all of the military cordialities, I think, is what they're teaching you.
But some people can learn that in 2 days, and other people take
well,
seven,
I guess
or
it just
is it
depends
just...
on when openings occur,
okay.
You know, when they can get the people moved out into the actual training.
Okay.
Because sometimes there might be, you know, basic training classes that last a couple days longer than what they are normally scheduled to, and so that opening might not be there for another couple of days.
Okay.
So it just depends. You know, some people would come in and they'd have everything done in a couple of days with that particular group, and they'd move out, and your group might be taking a little bit longer because they don't have room for you yet.
So they just keep going over the same things while they're waiting for you.
They have you clean and clean and clean and buff
okay.
the floors. And
do you have a cleaning lady at this time?
No. Unfortunately not.
Got a little sick of cleaning.
Yeah.
Okay, so you finally got through the initiation,
mm-hmm.
and you stayed in the same base.
Right.
All
yes.
right.
Yes.
And what, once you could start counting mm-hmm. down now,
mm-hmm.
what did your day typically?
You know, the one interesting thing I will say is the class that I was in was the first co-ed basic training class ever in the history of the military.
Really?
Yes.
And this would have been at what time?
July of 1993. Actually, like August. We started in August. So August of 1993. They always had the males and the females separated in basic training. We were the very first co-ed class ever in the military for basic training.
Okay.
And I think, and they did, I mean, on the base, most of the other classes were still separated by male and female.
Now, did you have co-ed dorm-type barracks, or
no.
did you have separate barracks but just trained
together? We were in the same building, we just
okay.
had separate floors. So
all
the
right.
women were on the third floor, the men were on the second floor, and then the first floor was the classrooms and common areas.
All right.
But I really honestly have to say that I think that my basic training was probably quite a bit easier than what other people may have experienced, because they didn't know how to handle
okay.
the co-ed classes yet.
I was going to say, did they
the
have
dynamics
to have,
was very different.
They have to have more, like, supervision or something, because there's only a floor separating the men and women.
Right. Well, you know, there wasn't really a problem with that so much, but I think because, you know, in our particular class, you're split up into four different squads. And the squads were also male and female, you know, integrated,
mm-hmm.
Male and females integrated together. And you know, the majority of us were 17, 18 years old. There were some people who were a little bit older, maybe in their early 20s, but the majority of us, we were teenagers.
Mm-hmm.
And there's that whole, you know, sexual tension between,
yes,
like, men,
yes.
between, like, male and female teenagers. And so there was, you know, people dating, and you can't really date, but
right.
I mean, you know, had feelings for each other and that kind of thing. And so I think it was very different, because normally in basic training, when we would see the other classes, you weren't even allowed to look at someone from the opposite sex.
Wow.
If you were in the lunchroom and your drill sergeant caught you even looking at a woman or caught you looking at a man, you maybe have to, you know, get down and do push-ups or something like that. But with us, they were our other classmates.
Your team.
So,
yeah.
Exactly. And so we were interacting with them all the time. So it was very different because they didn't really know how to handle that yet, I don't think.
So not a whole lot different from high school yet at this point.
Not really.
For
except,
they're making
right,
you do.
Exactly. Except for
our fire.
Right. And, you know, a lot, I mean, obviously a lot more disciplined, a lot more strict. But I think because they just weren't really sure on how to, you know, discipline you if, you know, if you were with the person from the opposite sex, they really couldn't at
yeah,
that point.
Yeah, right.
So,
I mean, that was one of their big things. Now that's taken away from them because
exactly.
they have to work together.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
And were your barracks open bay barracks or like a dormitory with somebody to a room?
It was basically like a dormitory. We had so many women to a room. I think in my room we had eight.
Oh,
it was typically eight women to a room.
In bunk beds?
We had four bunk beds.
Okay.
Four sets of bunk beds.
All right.
And so there was eight of us in a room. And I think that was pretty typical throughout all the other rooms. There was about eight other
okay.
or eight men in the room.
And what type of things were you trained for at this point now in basic?
When I went to basic training is when I was just really trained in general, you know, rifles. And we would go through, you know, CPR, all the different, you know, medical training
okay.
that they give you and... Just really all the general training that they do.
A lot of marching.
A lot of marching, right. You go through, like, pomp and circumstance. And you do, I believe, if I remember correctly, you do three different segments. And the first segment is really more of just the really very general part of the military training where you do the marching and you do that kind of thing. And then the second section is the rifles where you learn shooting and
okay.
all of that kind of stuff. And then the third is really more of, like, classroom and then also survival.
Oh.
Where we would go out to the field. I think we went out to the field for a week.
Sleeping
and,
in.
Mm-hmm, that's where we would dig foxholes
okay.
and we would do different type of combat training.
And you'd sleep in the foxhole or did
mm-hmm.
you have tents?
We would also have little tents, but there were many nights where we actually had to sleep in the foxhole.
Actually, really?
Because mm-hmm, we would do like nighttime mock training.
Okay.
And that kind of thing.
When you were doing the marching, did you
mm-hmm.
ever have like these full packs or anything
mm-hmm.
that you had to march with? Like,
right.
How heavy would that be and how far would you march?
Oh gosh, I think they were probably about maybe 20 to 30 pounds.
Did they differ for men and women?
No.
Okay.
Nope, because we would pack the same thing.
Really?
Mm-hmm. And we would march 13 miles.
And the women could keep up with the men? Or
mm-hmm.
the men got to slack off because they had women?
No, well, maybe even a little bit of age. You know, it's hard to say because, you know, I mean, you were so well physically trained by that point because you're doing physical training every day.
Okay.
That we did that march at the very end of our training. That was really like the last week that we had is when
oh,
we did
okay.
the week out in the field.
All
and
right.
so by that time, you have 8 weeks of intense physical training, so you're in pretty good shape.
Okay.
And so I think everybody was able to keep up. It was definitely hard,
mm-hmm.
but I think for the most part, everybody was able to keep up with each other.
And how did you feel about this whole ordeal, having just come from high school in a
mm-hmm.
small... Grafton's not a big town. It's
mm-hmm.
a small town.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this whole regimented... You know, you go from being a senior in high school where you're
right.
king of the hill.
Right.
And I don't think that's how they make you feel in basic
no,
training.
No, I mean, they really do, they tear you down,
okay.
really. I mean, they really, supposedly the reason is that they want to tear you down to your very, very weak and then build you back up with what they want to teach you
mm-hmm.
and what type of ethics they want to give you and that kind of thing. But, yeah, it's very hard. But, you know, I honestly have to say that basic training for me, the first 8 weeks when I was there compared to the second 8 weeks that I had of advanced training, the basic training I thought was quite a bit easier.
Oh, really?
Advanced training for me was a lot harder.
Okay, so let's get into the advanced
mm-hmm.
training now. You said basic was 8 weeks.
Right.
Then did you stay on that same base, or did they send you to a different
one? I went to Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri.
Okay,
so.
And now this is getting to be July, August, September, so.
Mm-hmm. It was the end of September,
cooler.
Right, end of September, beginning of October when I went.
Probably the nicest part of...
Mm-hmm. Right.
Being at Fort Leonard.
Right.
Nicest time to be there.
Right, right. Yeah, the weather wasn't bad. It got a little cold by the time I left, but at that point it was still fairly mild.
Okay.
So.
And what were you doing? First of all, what were they going to train you for?
They were going to train me for, my job was a 51 Bravo, which is the code for carpentry masonry.
And how did they determine that?
That was the job that I chose when
you
I enlisted.
You chose it?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, when you enlisted.
When
you
I
already
enlisted.
Knew when you enlisted.
Right.
When
you enlist is when you actually choose your job. And because, like I said, I was kind of towards the end of the fiscal year, there were very few jobs to choose from. There was maybe 5 to 10 jobs that I could actually choose from.
What were your other options?
I know that one was a truck driver. I don't remember what the other ones were. They were all different kinds of trades.
Okay. And why there wasn't a lot of carpentry and masonry?
Because it had a $2,000 signing bonus.
The money again.
You know, that was one of the reasons. Okay. And it was also something I thought that I could put to use. I mean, as far as like learning carpentry skills and things like that, I thought it would be something useful maybe, you know, down the line.
Now, having known your grandpa a little bit and knowing that he could make almost anything, plus build his house, do you think that had any input into
it? A little bit, sure. I mean, it's like those are always just general things. I mean, you can use carpentry skills around the house. Mm-hmm. You know,
but you hadn't seen it in action.
Exactly, yeah. Okay. Yeah, so it was definitely something interesting. But, you know, in this area, in southeastern Wisconsin, or really, I think throughout Wisconsin, we only have so many reserve units, and there aren't a lot of jobs. There aren't a lot of variety of jobs in the reserve units. Most of the battalions in this area are all engineering battalions, so that's why it's always that kind of job that you have, right? Or you can do a medic or something like that if that's available.
Because
the training is much longer.
Once you finish all your training, now you come home to regular civilian life,
right?
And you have these. You know, you just go to a meeting each month, and
that's what you do.
And every summer, so you have to have something
right
that will fit into what they have up here.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because whatever they have available is what you have to choose from.
Now, if you told them you were moving to another part of the company where the units do different things, I suppose
then you probably
you
could. Sure. Exactly. But because I was actually going to be staying in this area, one of the other things I also had looked at that point is I wanted to join the military and I wanted to be a part of that, but I didn't want to really necessarily put myself at risk for having to be called up to war if I didn't have to, because I knew I was planning on going to school and all that. So one of the other things I looked at is I wanted to be part of a unit that didn't have the risk of maybe being called up. And so the unit that I was assigned to had never been called up ever since its existence, which was at like 65 years at that point.
Right.
So that was one of the other things I had looked at, just because I knew with my overall plan, that may not be something I wanted to really necessarily do if I didn't have to.
And they provided you with information like that before you
because they can advise you as far as what unit you might be assigned to and things like that.
Do you know now with the things going on in Iraq and everything that's been since you went in, if that unit has been called up?
They have.
They have now.
Mm-hmm. They spent about 9 months in Iraq.
So after how many years did they have to go?
70. Well, probably about 75 years.
75 years, and then they did go.
Yep.
So you never really know.
No, you don't, and you don't really know. And actually, even when I have a few friends that I'm still in touch with from that unit, and when I found out that they were going, I really felt very guilty.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like if I didn't have two small children, I may have even volunteered to go back and do it, because I thought, here I have this training, and I'm not helping out.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of, you have this sense of obligation, even though I wasn't even in the military anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It was very hard for me knowing that I had friends that were going over there and that I wasn't a part of that.
Yeah,
so
I hear that a
mm-hmm.
lot. Okay, so now you're heading to this training for carpentry and masonry.
Mm-hmm.
What were your days like there now? You said it was harder.
It was harder.
It was harder.
The drill sergeants were much harder. And like I said, I think, because when I was in basic training, I didn't think much of it as far as the fact that it was a co-ed class and that we may have had it easier.
Okay.
But once I got to advanced training and it wasn't co-ed.
Oh, it wasn't.
No, the women were separate from the men. In the training it was, because you have everybody lumped together. But the classrooms. And I mean, it was just much more strict. I think they weren't doing that yet. It was only at Fort Jackson that they were doing that. It was the first time they'd ever done it. And so they were much more strict than what I had in basic training. And so looking back, when I got there, I thought, well, I had it pretty easy, you know, compared to what I was experiencing there. And so it was actually quite a bit more difficult. I think the other thing that was also very hard about it is I had formed really strong friendships with people at basic training. And I had, I felt very comfortable with everybody, and I was very close to everybody. And now you're leaving everybody, and you're starting all over again.
So there was nobody from that unit that went?
No,
to the same.
To Fort Leonard, but not in my class.
Okay.
So there.
They had different things that are being trained.
Right.
For.
Exactly. So I didn't know anybody from basic training going to advanced training. So it was like starting all over again, and being in. And the base wasn't quite as nice. Fort Jackson was a nicer place to be.
Okay.
For training than Fort Leonard Wood was.
Now, did you ever get any time off that you could get in touch with these other people?
Not really. I mean, you could. With letters, you know, we stayed in touch with letters and things like that.
At Fort Leonard Wood. You said they were at Fort Leonard Wood, but on your time off, could you
not
get to
really.
That?
I mean, not really. We didn't have very much time off. Plus, I really didn't know where they were within the base. And so, and there was only maybe
they don't provide
two
you a nice directory to.
No, not really. And there was maybe two or three people that were there from basic training that I knew, but no one that I was particularly close to either.
Right.
We had a little time off. Once we got into a couple weeks of the advanced training, we would get off maybe, you know, in the afternoon until the following morning or something like that. So we did get a little bit of time off, but there wasn't much to do. It was no, we were kind of in the middle of nowhere. There wasn't much around Fort Leonard Woods, so.
So what did you do to entertain yourself? I mean, what did you do?
Well, usually there you would get a group of people and we would go and get a hotel room and just hang out.
Okay.
Wouldn't really do very much.
Did they have entertainment on base for you, like movies or bowling alleys? Or?
They had, you know, we never really went, they really didn't have much. They had a little bit of a mall, you know, where they had the PX. They had the Army stores and things like that. We never went to a bowling alley or a theater on Fort Leonard Woods, so I don't remember if they had that or not. They may have, but we always went off. I think when you have free time, you just want to get off base.
Okay.
You know, so you don't have to worry about running into a captain, or you don't have to worry about running into anybody. You just want to get away from it. So,
even in your free time.
Even in your free time, you're still around the
group,
exactly. Right, yeah, you still have to kind of keep up with that. So the first thing we wanted to do is just get off base and get around normal people.
Okay.
For even if it's, you know, half a day.
And what did your training involve here now?
That's what we would just do. We did the classroom training on carpentry. We had our first section was carpentry. We would learn all the carpentry skills and learn how to roof and learn how to do drywall and learn how to do walls and all this different stuff. And then we also had done, and then at the end we did masonry training where we learned how to lay block.
Okay. And you actually did this? I mean, did you actually build a building at all?
We did. I mean, we would do, like I know, I remember one of our tests, one of our exams that we had to pass, I think the last thing that we had to do was actually with concrete block, we had to build like a small building. It was fairly small. We each individually did our own. It was maybe about 50 block that we had to lay.
Okay.
We had to make sure that, you know, it was that we had the flush lines and your mix mortar and do all that kind of stuff. So and I actually really enjoyed, I enjoyed the masonry part of it much more than the carpentry, which I was really surprised at.
The creativeness, probably. You know,
and I think it's very detail-oriented.
Okay.
You have to, you know, you're using your level, and I'm a very detail-oriented person, so I think because of that I enjoyed knowing that it had to be exactly right and everything like that. So I really enjoyed that part of it.
Then would they tear these down so that the next class could do something? Or
yeah.
Did you have to know how to tear it down too?
We tore it down ourselves.
Okay.
After we spent about 2 hours building it, and then we tore it down. Yeah.
All right. And how long was that training? 8 weeks?
That was also 8 weeks.
So that brings us to about what time?
I actually came back the day before Thanksgiving. So November 23rd,
24th,
right?
Of 1993. Mm-hmm. And what did you do when you got home then? Did you
slept? Had a nice Thanksgiving. I had,
have to get into a unit here then, or were you already in one?
I was assigned to one before I left.
Okay.
I was assigned to a unit in Pewaukee.
Oh, so that's a way
to. It was pretty far away, yeah. It was pretty far away, but it was the unit that had an opening for me at the time. And so so I actually had, even before I went to basic training, I actually had gone with my recruiter to visit the unit and met people there and everything like that, so I knew where it was. And then when I came home, then I was assigned, and I don't think I had to go the first month in December. I probably had gone for the first time in January when they had their normal.
And then they do like a weekend
drills.
Or one night?
It would be a weekend. It was
okay.
Typically Saturday at 7 o'clock until about 5 o'clock, and then Sunday the same hours. Sometimes you would have a Friday night that you would need to come in maybe a couple times a year, but most of the time it was Saturday and Sunday.
So how long a drive was that from Grafton?
Well, from Grafton it was about 45 minutes to an hour, but by the time I started I was in school.
And where did you go?
From Milwaukee, UWM.
And you were living on?
I was living
there?
On campus, so then it was really about a 30-minute drive for me.
Not
so,
too bad then.
No.
Mm-hmm. All right. I should ask if there are any particular memories from your basic or your advanced training, that any little stories?
Oh my gosh, I'm trying to remember. I can't think of anything right offhand as far as
any little pranks or anything you'd play on each other.
Oh gosh.
Involved with cleaning or.
I'm just trying to think.
Or, you know, men and women. You were
I know. Well, I think, you know, like I said, the strangest thing for us was the fact that it was co-ed. And I think that. You know, and that was really interesting. It's like you know, we, like I said, we had a lot of people who would, you know, try to date behind the scenes, and and everything like that. So, I mean, it was just very interesting that way. I can't think of any particular stories, though. I might think of something as we go along.
But anybody ever get caught trying to date behind the scenes? Was there a consequence to that?
No, there really wasn't a consequence. They didn't know what to do, and so they just basically, you know, they just kind of kept you separated as much as they could.
Okay. Any particular instructors that stick out in your memory?
Both of my instructors from basic training, I remember both of them very well. And actually, they were great. They really were. I mean, they were really great. I mean, we actually, even at the end of our basic training, we got them plaques thanking them because they, like I said, it was very different from advanced training. They were both men.
Okay.
They were both men.
Did you have men and women instructors with the co-ed group, or were they all men?
I believe some of the other, because we had a couple different classes that were co-ed, starting at the same time, and a couple of the other ones may have had women, but both of our instructors, drill sergeants, were men.
Okay.
And they were not nearly as tough on us as they were in advanced training. In advanced training, I had much harder instructors, and they were much stricter.
Because they were in the same old routine for years. It wasn't a new thing they were dealing with.
Exactly. And it's like, and I don't know, I mean, I guess it maybe just depends on the drill sergeant, too, because I don't even think our drill sergeants that we had, I mean, for basic training, they certainly were tough, but yet they also were, they also helped you, I think. And I think they kind of took the approach that they knew that we were very young,
mm-hmm.
and they knew that we were, you know, away from home for the first time, and it's almost like they more took us under their wing.
Wow.
And try to,
not
the normal story, and it was really different. And so it's like I mean, really everybody was actually quite fond of them, but in advanced training it was much harder. They weren't like that. They weren't personable to you.
So you weren't sad to say goodbye to them.
No, not at all.
All right. So you came back. You went to school. You got started in a unit.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I should ask, too, how about the food? How'd you like the food in the military? Did it
change? It was a lot to be desired. No, it wasn't very good. I do remember eating scrambled eggs with shells, and with the eggshells in it. I remember that was not very good.
Did you ever get, like, KP duty, you hear of? You did.
Mm-hmm. We would have KP duty. They would, you know, you'd have to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning. I mean, the schedule.
I guess you either were shells.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the schedule in training is obviously very hard because you're getting up. I mean, if you have KP duty, you're up at 4 o'clock in the morning. If you don't have KP duty, you're up at maybe 4:30 or 5 o'clock in the morning. And you're up and you're, you know, exercising and running 2 miles you're exercising really for 2 hours. So you're done exercising and doing all of your workout by 7 o'clock. You're in the shower and you're in class by 8. You know, and then you're up until 9 o'clock in the classroom, or it's just you learn to live without a lot of sleep,
mm-hmm.
is what it really comes down to. And you know, like I said, there would be times where maybe someone would do something wrong, or maybe things weren't cleaned well enough, and they'd get you up at 1 o'clock in the morning just to take you outside and exercise for an hour. And they do that, you know, they do that just to do that. Of course, they're just
mm-hmm.
trying to mess with you and
mm-hmm.
trying to break you down and
mm-hmm.
you know, just get you to that level. But yeah, it was definitely lack of sleep, and KP duty would entail a whole day of cooking. Well, we wouldn't really do much of the cooking, but you know, washing pans
and these are
slaving
big pans. I mean,
oh yeah, yeah. You know, just washing and taking trays and just basically like working in a cafeteria for
so
a whole day.
Okay, so you rotated through KP.
You would rotate through KP. You'd have KP maybe once a week.
Oh really?
Mm-hmm.
That often.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Once a week, maybe once every 2 weeks, something like that.
At least 4 to 8 times you got to.
Absolutely, yes. Yeah, got to enjoy that.
Did you ever get any kind of leaves or anything during any of this training?
The one thing that, you know, with basic training, I do remember that they held a concert on base for everybody who was in training. I don't remember who came in concert. It was a like not a very popular band at the time, but someone you know who we knew,
mm-hmm.
and we had this concert that we were able to go to, and I believe that was actually maybe over like Labor Day or something like that.
Okay.
When they had that, when we were down in Fort Jackson, and you know, and then the last couple days that we were there, when we were graduating from basic training, you know, they allow your families to come down, and so my parents came down, and my brother and sister, and my two grandmas came down at that time.
Okay.
So, They had come down, and then they allow you to take that day off, and then you have your next day, which is graduation, and then you leave the next day for your next training.
Oh, right away.
Right away.
No leave in between.
Yep. So you go right away the next day. So you really had like maybe 2 days off where you could spend time with your family.
And basic, I mean, you were training 7 days a week.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes. In basic training, you didn't have any time off.
All right. And at all. Now, about what about the advanced training?
In advanced training, we would get off, like I said, maybe Saturday afternoon, and then we would have off that day, the rest of that day, and then we'd have to report back Sunday. But Sunday also was kind of a relaxing day. You'd have to stay maybe on base, but you'd be able to do some things within the base and things like that.
Okay, so
you had a little bit more free time.
You weren't exactly in classroom or training on Sunday.
Right.
So you were off pretty much like
maybe a day and a half.
Okay.
But that was only really towards the latter part of the training. The first couple of weeks we didn't have that free time, and then maybe the last 3 to 4 weeks they would allow you some free time.
Okay. So now when you couldn't leave the base, but you had that day and a half off, what would you do in that free time?
Make phone calls to family and go to church. You know, that was, I think, one of the, for a lot of people, especially in basic training, when you didn't have any time off, that was your release.
The only way you could get time off?
That was the only way you could get time off, is really going, spending an hour at church.
And if you didn't go to church?
You were stuck in the barracks.
Okay.
So most people went, whether they were religious or not. Totally true.
Whatever.
Like, yeah, they just wanted to go just because they wanted to get out of the barracks and go do something, because that was the only place they really couldn't yell at you or do anything.
Oh, okay.
And that kind of thing. So most people decided they wanted to get out and go do that.
I asked about the food. You said it left a lot to be desired. Was there anything in particular that you especially didn't like or looked forward to having?
You know, I mean, some of the things that you can't mess up too bad, such as pizza.
You know, they served you pizza.
French fries. Yeah, I mean, they had a variety of things.
Okay.
It just wasn't really very good.
Okay.
But
was the food any different between one base and the other?
Not really. It was pretty much the same.
Pretty standard.
The barracks, I mean, the sleeping conditions, though, or the rooms that we had were different, because in basic training, we each had, like I said, we had 8 women to a room or 8 people to a room. And when I went to advanced training at Fort Leonard, the barracks were quite a bit older.
Mm-hmm.
And the base was, I think, quite a bit older. At Fort Jackson, they had been starting to redo a lot of the barracks and things like that. So when I got to Fort Leonard Wood, we had one big bay area.
Oh.
Where all of the women slept together.
So your training was probably in reverse order.
It was.
Most people describe their worst initially, and then they get better as they go on.
Mine got worse as I went along.
You're going downhill.
Right. And then the last couple of weeks you're there, they take some of the people, like some of the women, if they were, like I was a squad leader at that point, and you're allowed to have your own room. So I shared a room with one other woman.
Oh, really?
At that point, the last maybe 3 weeks I was there.
And how did you get to be a squad leader? They only pick them at the end?
No, they pick them at the beginning, but they only, like the people who had left maybe before me, then that room opened up, and so whoever was the squad leader was able to actually go and
stay
in the
room. So you were a squad leader from the time you got to?
I don't think so. I think, gosh, if I remember correctly, that there are other squad leaders throughout the training that you're there, but then you kind of change maybe a couple of times throughout, and maybe the squad leader says, I don't want to be the squad leader anymore, and
so
they want someone else to take over.
Kind of to give people a leadership position type thing?
Exactly.
Just to,
mm-hmm.
All right. So now if you had it early on, would you have had to leave that room and go back to the bay when somebody else was squad leader?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, so it was nice to have it at the end.
It was nice to have it at the end, because then, then you had your own room with one other person, so that was nice.
Okay. I think I don't know if I did ask you while we were taping, mm-hmm. but any friend? You said you had some really close friends. Mm-hmm. Did you keep in touch with any of these people then after?
I did for a while. From basic training, I did. I had probably about 3 or 4 people that I was very close to from basic training, and 2 were men that I was very close to, and I stayed in touch with them for a couple of years, and we just eventually grew apart. Another one was a girl that I was really close with, and she lived in Illinois, so it was easy. We would go back and forth and visit once
mm-hmm.
in a while, and once again, we kind of grew apart after about maybe 4 or 5 years.
Okay.
We stayed in touch for a while.
Okay. So about the time everybody's getting married, having kids.
Exactly. And lives change, and you get busy and all that kind of stuff. So.
Well, and you said you went to college, so 4
right.
or 5 years.
Right.
You've got, you know, that you're still in the student mode.
Right.
And once you get into the family mode.
Right, exactly.
It takes more effort to
mm-hmm.
keep that involvement.
Mm-hmm.
What were you required to do? What were your duties at your reserve meetings?
We would do a variety of things. We would you know, it just depends on what they had on the weekends. A lot of times they didn't really have projects for us, so killing time a lot of the times. You know, doing
staying out of notice.
Exactly. That's just it. It's like you just don't want to be seen, you know.
Okay.
But when we would get there on Saturday morning, we had our area where we had all of our vehicles, and so we would have to go out and do inspection of the vehicles, make sure that everything's running okay on a monthly basis. You know, check the oil and
you know that being trained in masonry. And
no, they would train you on that. Once you get to the unit, they train you on that, and they teach you how to. But then you can get your driver's license to drive the 5 tons or to drive the Humvees and all of that kind of stuff. And so eventually then I also was licensed. And
so you were driving trucks anyway.
I was driving trucks anyways, yeah. I wasn't, even though I was an official truck driver, we were
what
still driving the trucks.
What was your title after, you know, after being trained in the masonry? What title do they give you?
Just, like, they would just basically go by the codes, like, you were like a 51 Bravo was what my occupation was, or the code for the military. And so they would keep all the 51 Bravos together on one platoon.
And 51 Bravo meant masonry and carpentry.
Exactly.
Trained?
Yep.
Okay.
Exactly. And so they would try to keep each job that each person had. They would keep all the jobs in one platoon. So then we'd have a platoon of maybe the vehicle maintenance crew.
Okay.
And they were in charge of making, you know, if anything was wrong with the vehicle, they would fix it. We would check them. They would fix it.
Okay.
And so you'd have all your different. You'd have what maybe four different jobs within my unit.
Now this is after you
after
got
I
to
right, when I come back, right, when I'm in Pewaukee.
So when you got into Pewaukee, were you still 51 Bravo, or did
yes.
they give you a different title?
No, I was still 51
okay.
Bravo. And then you stay that, because the only way you can actually change your occupation in the military is if you go back for training.
Okay.
So if I would wanted, if I wanted to change to something else, I'd have to go back and retrain.
So 51 Bravo didn't necessarily mean that you were doing just masonry.
Right.
And
it just means that that was what I was trained to do.
Okay.
But you'd be doing other things. Like I said, we would, you know, then once you get to the unit, they'd want to get you licensed on the trucks because they need people who are going to drive. And we do things around the community. There were sometimes, what did we do? Like, you know, in Pewaukee, if they would need something done at a park. I think we went once and, like, built a structure at a park for them. We built a retaining wall downtown and things like that. So if the community needed something, they would ask us to come and do it.
So you still did get to use those skills.
Oh, sure. We would still do things. I mean, as they didn't have enough for us to do is the problem. It's, I think there was a lot of people there who wanted to do that kind of thing, and it really made the weekends go by fast.
Yeah.
We actually also, our unit built a new bathroom down at the Summerfest grounds.
Oh, really?
This was about...
That's in Milwaukee.
Mm-hmm. Yep,
mm-hmm.
And yep, Summerfest grounds downtown Milwaukee. We did that for about a year. It was like we started in like 2 winters, so it took us from 1 winter throughout the summer, and then the next winter it was done.
Because you're just doing this 1 week.
We were just
a
doing
month.
It 1 weekend a month, exactly. And so we would come in and we built a brand new handicap accessible bathroom downtown.
Now, did you have to know how to read blueprints and everything like that?
We had a lot of the men who were in our unit, because it was predominantly men. We only had about maybe six, seven, eight women
out of
in
how
the
many?
Unit. 150.
Oh, in the whole unit?
In the unit,
okay.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
they weren't all masonry and carpentry people?
Most of the women were. We had
okay.
In my platoon, we had 4 women. For the most time that I was there, we had 4 women. And we had about maybe 40 men.
Okay.
So, I mean, the ratio of men to women was very, very big.
Mm-hmm.
It was spread apart, I guess. But we had a lot of the men who did this for a living.
Okay.
And they had a lot more experience. So we were really more of the laborers, the people who didn't really know what they were doing. For the most part, we would help out. But they knew how to read blueprints and do all that kind of stuff.
Was that part of your training, though, to read the blueprints?
Not really.
You were just worker bees.
Exactly. Yeah, because I think they figure that you could eventually learn that if you'd want to. I mean, they just give you very basic training and,
okay.
you know, and teach you different things. But, no, you really are probably more just like the laborer.
Because actually, like, Army is pretty much infantry, so if you were going to build something,
mm-hmm.
it was probably something that just had to be put up quickly.
Exactly.
More of a temporary testing.
Exactly. Like, if we were ever to be called up to combat, we'd be building up tent cities, but
okay.
we'd be doing building up temporary housing, something that not something that's going to necessarily need to stay there for good.
Okay.
You know, or we'd be cleaning up. Is what we'd be doing after the combat is over.
Okay.
So that's really what our particular unit is earmarked for.
All right. And what did you do during the summers then, for your 2 weeks?
In
Where
the summers
would
it would vary. I spent 2 of my summers, we actually went to Germany.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. And if they sent you overseas, you would actually go for 3 weeks. To give
oh.
you extra time for traveling.
That was hard to take.
Yeah, it was very hard. And then they would also give you a couple of days off. which was nice. So, I mean, you really spent still about 2 weeks doing work or training, but then you'd have the other week traveling and having
and
some time off and things like that.
Were you on a military base?
We were on a military base. The first time we went to Germany, we went to Hohenzollern, Germany, and both times we went there, we actually were putting together buildings that they were using for really war practice. And so we would put up block buildings, and then the infantry division would come in and use them, you know, to hide behind, and they'd use it for different things that they were doing as far as practice goes.
All right. So when you enlisted in the reserves, did you think you were going to be seeing Europe?
I had no idea. I knew that our unit had actually done some traveling. Other times that they had gone, when I wasn't able to go, they had gone down to, where did they go? They went to Central America a couple of times. Went to Panama. They actually had traveled quite a few different places. Samoa, they went to. Then the few times I went, we went to Germany. There was one year I couldn't go because I had summer school, so I didn't go.
Oh, so you weren't required to go? Was this a volunteer?
You were required to go, but if you weren't able to go on those 2 weeks, you could make it up by coming into the unit.
Okay.
So then there was, so even because my summer school coincided with when they were going on this 2 weeks, I came in later on in the year and just spent 2 weeks in the unit doing things around the unit and things like that.
Because these
have to make it up.
They are open, like, full-time.
Exactly, yeah. They are open full-time, even though you're only there 1 week in a month. But
they have different units coming in at
those
times?
They didn't. In our unit, they didn't. No, we were only there 1 week in a month, but they were there for support. You know, if someone needed something during the week, they were open. They were really a fully functional reserve unit and did other things when we weren't there. So, and then, like I said, a lot of times if people couldn't make it on that particular weekend or during the 2 weeks, then they'd come in that following weekend and make it up.
So they're
it was on an
good.
Exception basis, really. I mean, they weren't really very flexible, but they would be if you had a good enough excuse.
Okay.
So it just depended on what your reason was.
Yeah, like, I'm having a baby.
That would be okay. Yeah.
Okay. Any particular little stories you remember about this time now? Your reserve years?
Oh, yeah. I mean, because it was such a long time, I was there for 6 years active in the reserves at that unit and then 2 years of the inactive reserve. Mm-hmm. But, there was a lot of stuff, especially when we were overseas. And on our time off is really where, you know, you had the most fun, obviously.
So you'd get, like, the weekends off?
We could take, for the 2 weeks or for the 3 weeks that we were there, we would be able to take off any 3 days. If we wanted to, as long as it wasn't right in the beginning or right in the end, they wanted to kind of have you take it in the middle and not everyone take it all at once.
So you were allowed 3 days off.
We were allowed 3 days off.
Either all together or you could spread
it out.
Because
it was really more like you were working. It wasn't, I mean, it's obviously not strict like when you were in basic training where you're under their control all the time. We'd be getting up still about probably 5:30, 6 o'clock, you know, getting up, doing a little bit of physical training. For the people who actually could do physical training, by that time, you're back in the real world and you're not as in good shape as you normally would be.
So the physical aspect wasn't so easy anymore.
And, you know, we would get up and do our physical training, go to breakfast, and then basically, like, you're working a normal day on the job.
Okay.
We'd work from 8 until maybe 5. And depending on how things were going, if we were behind in our work, we'd obviously work a little bit later. But many days we'd be done by 5, and we'd have the nights off. And we'd go into the local town. Yeah,
you could leave the base. Okay.
They would actually have a bus that, you know, we would have one person from our platoon or whatever who was the bus driver, who volunteered to be the bus driver. Maybe they didn't want to go out and drink a beer or something like that, so they volunteered to be the bus driver.
And did you ever go out?
That was not me.
No.
Just because you had to drink the beer?
Yeah.
I wasn't the bus driver ever.
But you could have been.
I could have been, but no.
They went to enjoy the town.
Some people didn't mind. They liked doing that, so that was fine. And, you know, and then we'd have one bus that would take us back and forth. We'd go to the local town, meet, you know, the locals, and it was amazing being that young and being able to do that and getting paid for it, really. I mean, you know, having the military is paying for you to go there and see Europe.
How old were you that young?
The first time, well, we went the first year I was in, so I was like 18 or 19 years old, 18, and then we went back 3 years later, so I was 21, and we went to a different part of Germany. And so then I went with a couple friends both times, and we traveled down into Austria, rented a car. You know, saw a lot of different things. It was really, I mean, really a great experience.
It's a beautiful area.
Yeah, it's beautiful, it is.
And to get from one country to another mm-hmm. in Europe is not much different than going from state to state.
Exactly, and especially the second time we were there, we were actually very close to the border of Austria, so it was about an hour away.
Mm-hmm.
So we didn't go very far, but we just went, you know, on, just across the border and saw a little bit and came back.
Mm-hmm.
But it was really very interesting and something that I would have never been able to do otherwise.
Right.
Especially going there with such a large group of people.
Yeah.
So
by this time now you're feeling comfortable. You know people again.
Right. And you're with people who are from this area. So, everybody's from southeastern Wisconsin, Milwaukee suburbs. So you may, you know, stay in touch with them more than you would people from across the country.
Okay.
So.
Over in Germany now, what kind of sleeping facilities did you have there while you were there for those 3 weeks?
It was a smaller barracks. I mean, we had, the women were in one room, and we had the four of us who were from our unit, we had the four of us, and then we had, if there were any other women, because there were so few women that were doing this type of job, we would have women from other units in this area that were maybe over there at the same time. There would maybe be a total of 10 or 15 of us that would stay in like a small barracks room.
Okay.
Yeah, we'd each have our own cot. And
so it's not like it was a bay meant for 40 people and you only had 10 in it.
Right. It was a smaller
room. And you had cots instead of bunks then?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, cots, and sometimes we would have bunks, depending on where we were staying.
All right.
It wasn't too bad.
So now, is the food the same as it was in the States, or?
Yeah. It's the military food. No.
You get a different country.
Not much better. No.
Did you get to sample any of the local food then?
Not on base, we didn't. On base, we would still have just the normal military food. But when we would go out at night, we would be able to go out. And if you'd want to go to a restaurant or want to, you know, go somewhere, you were free to do that.
Was there anything there that you were able to eat that you weren't used to getting at home that you liked?
They have the normal, like, schnitzel and all of that kind of stuff that we tried. So, yeah, there was a few different German things that I tried that I'd never tried before. But I'm also from a German family.
Oh.
So, you know, it's like a lot of the stuff I may have tried before. But but it's definitely different being over there than it was here.
And it sounds like you sampled the local beer.
Yes, we did. Yeah.
Was that different from
And here? I was underage the first time I went, so, I mean, for me to be able to go over there and drink legally, that was a great thing.
So you could drink legally because you were with the military?
Mm-hmm. Well, because in Europe it was legal.
Oh, it was legal.
Yeah,
okay.
In Europe they don't have a drinking age, so so it was legal for me to drink there.
Oh, so the first time you could drink legally.
It was the first time I could drink legally.
Legally.
When I was in Europe. So yes, we were able to sample the local beer. And
you were probably... Probably a bit of a connoisseur of beers by that time.
I don't know. No, I wouldn't say so.
Or in your past experience now, did the beer in Germany taste any different than the beer here?
We actually had warm beer.
Oh.
It was warm and it was thick and dark.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
And here we like it
light and cold.
Exactly.
So, yeah, it was quite a bit. I mean, it wasn't very good.
You didn't like it?
Well, the traditional dark lager I didn't like. Then they also had some... different like Weisses, which is like, you know, their term for beer, but they had like a honey Weiss and different, all these different beers that actually, once I came back, I also realized that we had that here also.
Yeah, it's been seen in stores. Mm-hmm. I'm not a beer drinker myself, but.
And I think it became quite a bit, I mean, it was very popular once we had come back, and it seemed like it was kind of that time when they came out with Lining Pools Honey Weiss and all that kind of stuff.
I think they were just starting it
right
over here then.
Right.
All right. When you were touring, what in particular struck you about the country as far as, you know, the difference between there and here? Or
it's very clean. Very, very clean. I mean, I think that was one of the main things that I was just in amazement of. The one of the towns that we went to that was really near the Hohenzollern space that we went to, the streets are, like, just everything looks brand new. The streets are in perfect condition.
And how old would these cities have been? They're old.
Oh, they're old cities.
Centuries
old. But it's like everything is in such fabulous shape. Like the streets, it's like they're all brand new paint, you know, and like the signs are glistening. It's just every little thing, it's like it's well taken care of, and it's not run down, and it has a lot of different charm. And just seeing the countryside and everything like that, it was just very, very different. And I had never been to Europe before, so for me it was quite an eye-opener.
Right.
Being, you know,
was the terrain a lot different than Wisconsin?
Well, very hilly, and it's just not as populized.
Okay.
I guess it's like, you know, a lot of open fields and very green. Because we actually flew into Frankfurt.
Okay.
Both times, and so we ended up having to take a bus for about 3 hours. So by bus, we saw a lot of different areas that we normally maybe wouldn't have seen.
Right.
It was beautiful.
Now, you said you met some of the locals, I mean, just for the evening, or did you meet
them? No, just, pretty much just for the evening. We would go out to a bar, or we'd go out to a restaurant, or whatever, wherever we would go, and, you know, you'd talk to the locals, and they could speak English a little bit, so you're able to speak to them, and, you know, and they would always get a kick out of, you know, you being in the military, and find out what you're doing, and
hide
in the area, and all this kind of stuff, so... So yeah, they really enjoyed it, I think, as much as we enjoyed, you know, talking with them.
So they were pretty receptive to you being
very much.
Okay.
And I'm sure they were probably used to it also, just because the base was near there. So I'm sure they were used to seeing different people come over.
Been there for quite a few years, so.
Did you ever feel that any of the things you were trained for in the service have helped you now in later life?
Probably not as much as I would like to. I think that you know, I'm good with a hammer. And I can, you know, I can do little stuff. I'm probably more self-sufficient than, you know, what I think I probably would have been otherwise, as far as being able to do things around the house and being a little bit more handy. But I wouldn't trust myself to necessarily construct something.
Well,
I think that it was sound. You know,
I was
saying,
ask if you were planning a house that you wanted to build.
No. I mean, I wouldn't trust myself to do something like that. But a couple years ago, my husband and I redid our basement. And, you know, I know how to do drywall, and I helped out a little bit with that, and I can take down, you know, we actually do a lot of demolition, because we did a lot of demolition as well. When we would have our weekends where we would drill, and we spent about 2 years up at Fort McCoy, going up there, and we were demolishing a building and redoing it and building offices for them up there and things like that. And so I know how to do a lot of demolition, which is also fun, because you don't really have to know how to do anything. You just be tearing everything down.
Just grab it with a hammer.
Just grab it with a hammer. But
sometimes,
you know,
that's easier.
Exactly, you know.
Except for the mess afterwards.
Except for the mess. And we would do drywall, and we would do, you know, doing the walls, laying out the walls and things like that. And that's probably where I'm a little bit rusty, that I don't know that as well.
Okay. Is your husband talented in that area too?
Not especially.
Oh, so
no.
He's kind of happy to have you around?
We probably about equal. I mean, he knows enough where he can get by, and I know enough where I can get by. But
and do you tend to know different things so you can complement each other?
A little bit, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
so
I mean, we can kind of work together and do a couple things. Like I said, it's not something we would trust ourselves to necessarily do and, you know that we're doing it right, but we can do a little bit here and there. So.
Sometimes it just takes doing it.
Exactly.
Learn as you go.
Right.
How about then you finished your military commitment in June of 2001?
Right.
Now, was that, was also the
extra 2 years, correct. So I actually, the last time I spent in my unit doing the weekend drills was in June of 1999.
Okay. Did you form any friendships in this unit in Pewaukee then that you've maintained over the years?
Yep. I actually stay in touch with two people still on a regular basis. You know, and then there's other people who, and then there's other people I talk to, you know, every once in a while. We don't talk very often, but there's two people that I do still talk to on a regular basis, that a girlfriend of mine, and then also a guy friend, so.
And before you finished your obligation, did they encourage you to stay in or go active? Or
they do, not necessarily go active. I mean, they never really pushed for that all that much. I think that, you know, because we were all in the reserves, and everybody who was there was in the reserves, except for maybe just a few people who were there full time.
Okay.
You know, I think they understood why you were in the reserves, if you were in school or if you had a family, and so they really didn't push that too much. But they did definitely encourage you to re-enlist, and they wanted to, you know, to keep people there.
Okay.
But you know, at that point, I was getting married in August of '99. I knew we were planning on having kids in a few years. I mean, that was our plan, and I just didn't want to put myself at that commitment. Especially then, I mean, looking back, I had no idea what would happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then September 11th happened, and I thank God that I wasn't in at that point, because I had I was pregnant.
Oh.
I got pregnant a couple months later, but by the time we went to Iraq is when I would have been pregnant. And I thought, who wants to take that chance of us having a little baby at home and go to war?
And did your unit get called up?
Mm-hmm. They got called up. I mean, the timing of it is really uncanny, but they actually were called up when she was just about 4 months old. And the military rule is that if you have a child, if you have a child that's very young, once they're 4 months old, they can call you up. And so I couldn't get home because I thought if I was still in, I probably would have gone because she had just turned 4 months when they left.
And I remember when...
And they were gone for 9 months.
Yes, when they first started doing this, I don't know how many years ago, they started calling women into combat situations and that. I remember seeing that on TV, all the women having to leave their small children, you know.
Yeah. And I and it just hit home because I thought I would have probably had to go because she was just at that age.
Yeah.
So... And, you know, and like I said, I just didn't know at the time, but because that's what we were planning on doing, and I just didn't want that commitment anymore, I thought, I've done my 8 years, and I enjoyed it, and it was a great thing for me, and a great experience, but I knew that I was going to be doing other things in life, and I didn't want to put myself in that position.
Okay, so then before we started the interview, you mentioned something, too, about after a little bit, though, then your feelings were...
Oh, absolutely. I mean, when they, right,
like
I mean,
guilt like, or something.
Exactly, when they were called up, and I knew that they were called up, I even said to my husband, I said, I know it's silly, and I wouldn't want to go, I wouldn't want to put myself in that position, but I have this really strong sense of responsibility that I should be there, and that I should be going, because I have this training, and it's like, why have all of this if you can't use it?
Mm-hmm.
And why go through all of this if you're not there when your country needs you? But then again, I had a small daughter, so it's like, you know, it's like tug of war.
Yeah.
And it's like I couldn't take that chance of being over in a situation where it's completely, you just don't know what to expect. I mean, at that point, I mean, it's not settled, and there's a lot of terrorism over there, and I just didn't want to put myself in that position. But yet it was very hard for me not to call them up and say I could go. If I didn't have a child, even though I was married, I probably would have.
Even though you were finished with all the commitment you had given them, you would be able to go back in, or you would...
Sure, you could go back and you could...
Any time you could just...
I think so. I mean, I think you could. I mean,
I'm sure they wouldn't turn you down.
It depends, right? I mean, there may be situations where maybe you couldn't.
Okay.
But, I mean, they were asking for people, you know, to come back. I mean, I actually had gotten a phone call from someone saying, you know, would you be willing to come back?
Okay.
So, I think that they...
So, it wasn't
I mean, it was that, too. But it was, even if they hadn't called, it's still, you just feel guilty. Because
had
I had
gotten the phone call before you started thinking that?
No, it was after.
It was after.
I'd been thinking it already because I, you know, and like I said, I had a couple of good friends of mine who were going over there with my unit. One of the men that I knew, you know, probably in his mid-30s, has had 4 small kids at home. You know, and his wife, I mean, here he's leaving his wife and his 4 small kids, and I think that he had a baby also who was probably about 4 or 5 months old. And
no, it doesn't make any difference with men, how old the kids
are. No,
it's
just with women. With men, they can be called up regardless, but with women, because, you know, you're the mother and you might be breastfeeding or something like that, I think it's different.
And are they since back now from Iraq?
They are.
Okay.
They've been back, oh gosh, they would have left early in 2003, so they've been back about a year already, but I think there's...
How long did
they
have to
stay back?
Oh, really? They might go back again?
Mm-hmm.
And how long were they there the first time?
9 months.
And what were they doing? Did you talk to
him? You know, I did talk to him. I talked to one of my friends who had been there. I don't know exactly what they were doing. He really didn't tell me too much. And I don't know if it's because he couldn't or just because he didn't. I'm not sure.
You know, whether they're building something up or cleaning something up.
I think from what he had told me that they were doing, they weren't really building necessarily. I think they were kind of cleaning up and maybe like where some of the units had been, they were, you know, taking down supplies and things like that. And I think they were just basically pitching in wherever they needed them.
Okay.
But he didn't go into a lot of information. I talked to him about a week after he got back, and I think it was still a little too fresh in his mind for him to really sit down and talk about.
And it's not uncommon for people who've been in combat situations or war areas or whatever you want to say, just to want to just put it behind them.
Exactly.
Not to, you know, it's done.
Right.
Let's just leave it there.
Let's just move on, right?
Mm-hmm. Did you ever receive any kind of medals or citations or anything
general medals that our whole unit would receive.
Okay.
We received different medals for, I can't even think of what they were exactly. I mean, basic training, I actually had been rewarded with the number one woman for physical fitness. I can't think of what it was. Yeah.
Were you always physically...
I was pretty athletic in school, so coming out of high school and being athletic then and still being in pretty good shape when I went to basic training, I think definitely helped a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But I was at the number one in my class for that, so I received that award.
Okay.
And then I don't remember, I mean, our unit, like I said, had received some general awards, but I don't remember exactly what they were.
To do pretty well with the rifle? Did
Okay, I didn't wear it like, you know, I wasn't a sharpshooter or anything like that, but, or an expert, I guess, but I did okay.
Okay.
I qualified, so that was a good thing.
How about for going to Germany or anything? Do you get anything special for your unit having been there? Or?
Yeah, and you would also get different different recognition, you know, awards and things like that. And then actually when I was in Germany too, I actually have it at home. I don't remember what it was called, but I did receive an award for, you know, for working very hard there and it being kind of like a lot of times it would take kind of a leader position and things like that. So I received an award for that both times when I was in Germany. They would actually usually reward that at the end of the session.
Okay.
So,
and what about when you did things like for the city of Pewaukee?
Mm-hmm.
Did they have some recognitions or something then for the?
They would have. Yeah. I think that the city of Pewaukee once, after we had built a retaining wall in one of the parks, they had a picnic for us.
Oh, okay.
And they would do different things like that, or we'd be maybe a part of their local parade over the 4th of July. They would ask the people to be part of that. So they really incorporated the unit into the community a lot, I think, and tried to do that.
That's nice.
It was very nice. Yeah.
Have there been any reunions for your group, or
no,
you know, for basic or
no,
anything?
No, I would no. I would love it. You know,
well,
if
you
they
would.
Said, yeah, I think it would, I mean, especially for basic training, just because I had a lot of close friendships
right.
with that. So I would love it. But I actually had tried to get in touch with a couple people a few years ago and wasn't able to track them down.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I don't know where they are. I mean, I know generally where they live, but I haven't been able to find them. So.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Do you currently, or have you ever belonged to any veterans organizations?
I don't.
So.
Well,
busy with your family.
Yes.
And looking back on it, what do you feel your military experience has meant to your life?
I think it's meant a lot to my life. It really changed me as a person. You know, if I hadn't had that experience and hadn't had that discipline, and I think getting away from home the first time, I probably wouldn't be nearly as self-sufficient as I am. And, you know, I've always been pretty headstrong to begin with, so... I think it just kind of fit right in with what I was planning on doing anyways.
You're so good in those leadership positions.
So.
Okay. And since it had such a positive effect on your life, would you talk to that friend of yours again?
No. Yeah. No kidding.
I mean, would you thank her for that? Or
I would. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's like I'm very thankful that I did it. I think it gave me, you know, it's an experience that not very many people have. You know, I have a couple other friends who had joined after I did, and, you know, I can kind of talk to them about it, and they understand what you may have been through, but there's a lot of people who just don't quite understand what being in the military is all about, and what kind of camaraderie you have with people who are also in the military, or different experiences you go through. I mean, at 17, 18 years old, you're at such a vulnerable point in your life that the people that you meet and spend time with at that point change your life forever, and... I think if I'd gone away to school and was just, you know, even in college, it's kind of the same thing, but it's just different. It's not
party.
As meaningful. Exactly. It's just not as meaningful. It's not, you're not down to the core of what you're really doing when you're in the military. So it's just a lot different, and it definitely was a life-changing experience.
You could still do all the military type partying.
Exactly.
But you don't have someone over there drawing the line as to where
right.
it stops.
And you're not, and you're not desperate for them. I mean, it's like when, you know, when I was in basic training, you're desperate to you know, have a closeness with someone else, and it's like vice versa, they feel
okay.
the same way, so you just kind of grab onto somebody, and that's why because those friendships become, I think, so strong.
Okay.
Whereas in college, you know, it's normal life.
If you're not
here. Exactly, you know, it's normal life. I mean, you might have your friends from high school, so you're not as desperate for that, or you can go home if you need to.
Uh-huh.
Basic training, you can't do that. You're there.
That's it.
So
okay.
you don't have that escape, I guess.
So what if a young man or woman told you that they were thinking about the military, what would you say to
it
them?
It depends on them. It depends on who it was, and I think what it would mean for them. I did actually have my sister-in-law has a little brother who is, well, he's probably now in his, he's probably about 23 or 24 years old, and when he was graduating from high school, he had talked about joining the military, and I highly encouraged him to do it, and he actually really wanted to. It was his family that was a little hesitant about him doing it. He would be the first one from their family ever to do it, and they were a little scared, especially because it was, you know, it may have been around September 11th, or may have been right around when all that was going on. So I think they were a little hesitant about him doing it, and, you know, and I really did encourage him to do it, and he decided not to.
Okay.
So I think for him it would have actually been a very good thing. He was a little unsure of what he wanted to do in his life, and I think the discipline would have been a very good thing for him.
Mm-hmm.
But once again, it just depends on the person.
you know, each person I think is different as far as how they might react to something like that, but I think for most people it would be a pretty good experience.
Mm-hmm.
And I would recommend it.
Okay. Any other little stories or memories you have from the military that you'd want to share?
You know, the only other thing I can think of is, you know, we talked about when we did the training in Germany, and then a couple of the other years where we didn't go to Germany, we would go up to Fort McCoy.
Okay.
One year, or we went to Michigan one year to Camp Grayling for training, and we would just basically do mock combat training. And one of the funniest stories I do have is that this girlfriend of mine and I, we were in charge of one of the 5 tons. And these 5 tons
are
truck. Huge. They're
a little girl.
Well, they're dump trucks, and she is too. But so she was. So we were maybe, you know, 21, 22 years old at the time, and we're driving this, you know, probably $200,000 truck around, and you know, going through trails and doing all this stuff. And we're doing this mock training where they have you going on this convoy, and they had us going like all through the forest and all this kind of stuff on all these back trails.
So you're following a group.
We're following this
okay.
group because what we're doing is we'll go one location, and they'll set up this like smoke bomb
okay.
where you're smoked out, so you think that it's the enemy, and so you'll, you know, all pull over in your trucks, you'll get down and you'll low crawl through the fields and you'll do all this kind of different stuff. And so then you'll set up with your rifle and set up a perimeter and do all this thing that you're trained to do. Well, we had one of our lieutenants was Chinese, and he didn't speak very good English. His name was Lieutenant Lee. And so he's in charge of us, and he's in charge of the whole group. And you can't understand him very well to begin with, so it's kind of comical. So anyways, we get to this one convoy, we're coming in, they set up the smoke bomb, and we pull over a truck, and he's trying to direct my friend who's driving into this little area. And so he's directing her, and back up. Well, she ends up hitting a tree. $40,000 worth of damage on this 5-ton. Yeah, and it was just, I guess you kind of had to be there. It was really funny.
Did you
say stop? No, we didn't. And he kept on saying no. And we're like, are you sure? I don't really think we can go any further. No, keep coming. And we ran right into the tree, so.
Oh, how did they take
Well,
that?
We weren't at fault.
Oh, no.
I know.
He assumed responsibility.
He did assume responsibility.
Okay.
Yeah, he did.
Oh.
We did have another time, and when we were in Germany, one of the other girls had rolled a 5-ton.
Rolled it.
She had a load of gravel in the back. And was going down a hill and rolled it. She was banged up a little bit, but overall okay. So,
my goodness.
Yeah.
So then I suppose you had to clean all that up, too.
Yes.
I mean, not only were you concerned about her injuries,
right.
and I suppose
right.
the damage to
right,
the truck.
Right.
Because I assume there was some damage.
There was damage, yeah. Hers was totaled, I think.
Ooh.
So, yeah. Not fun, but the load was.
She have a
little...
problem with that, or?
No, she didn't. No,
okay.
I mean, they. You know, you're basically under their watch and their control, and
okay.
the higher ups have some responsibility, I guess.
And
but.
Big loads can shift.
Right, and that's what happened, is her load had shifted. And
that brings me to an interesting point.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't your grandfather in something
mm-hmm.
where they would haul big trucks?
Yes, excavating, uh-huh.
Yes.
Yep.
Gee, did you ever work for him at any time?
I didn't. No.
And what did he think of your abilities to handle these trucks?
I don't know. I mean, he really never said too much about
oh, really?
It. But yeah, I'm sure he probably was impressed to a certain extent.
or
scared, I don't know.
Yeah, maybe he just doesn't believe it
right.
would be a good idea.
Right, exactly.
Or, you know, if you get really short sometime, he may give you a call and say, oh, maybe.
Well, you know, and the thing is, too, is that they, you know, I mean, with our unit, I mean, they really, they train you a little bit on how to drive it, but... You know, I mean, it's
not really.
It's kind of like,
I have a job.
Good luck, yeah. Good luck with that 5-ton. So.
All right.
Well, that's
interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, anything else that you want to share?
No, I think that's probably about
okay.
it.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thank you.